just we need Iowa because of the problem, but we need a sound to come out of Iowa. This nation's got to hear from Iowa that Iowa has something to say about poverty and low wealth. But we also know if we raise the minimum wage tomorrow to $15, 49 million of the 62 million workers that work without a living wage would make a living wage, and it would pump $320 billion into the economy, and your hamburgers would not go up to $7. That's a lie that's always been told. It was told when Franklin Delano Roosevelt pushed the New Deal. The same line was told in 1935.
That's William Barber, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features William Barber on Why Iowa Matters. What's the matter with Iowa is what's the matter with large portions of the U.S. economy. Extreme poverty in the presence of extreme wealth. In 1962, Michael Harrington wrote about it in his book, The Other America. That America has not gone away. President Johnson's war on poverty was not won. It was abandoned in the battlefields of Indochina. Today, the United Way estimates almost one in four Iowans live in poverty. And depending on how it is defined, the number of poor people nationwide range from 50 to 140 million. Persistent poverty from coast to coast and growing homelessness are systemic problems. What must be done? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his historic Riverside Church speech, said, "True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring." The spirit of Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign of 1968 is being awakened around the country by our guest today, Reverend William Barber. He's chair of the NAACP's Legislative Political Action Committee. He's co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and serves as pastor at Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina. He spoke at the First Christian Church in Des Moines, Iowa. And now, William Barber.
Now, I know y'all like to do the hands in the air, but we need some hand clapping. Come on, put them together. Yeah, we want to, and I know now we're going to do it. I understand why we're doing it. I understand exactly. All right. But you know there's a vibration, too. Did y'all know that? That persons that may be hearing impaired can also feel. It's a vibration. And so we want to make the atmosphere shake. Amen. Amen. How many of you all learned something about, my brother's been saying Iowa, and I just learned that. Iowa, that's the tribe. How many of you all learned that? How many of you all from Iowa and you just learned it? Come on now, somebody lying. Come on, tell the truth now. All y'all didn't know that, right? But it's amazing what we learn when we come together, isn't it? It's amazing how we began to understand some of the ways we've been divided and some of the oppression that has gone on. And we are the ones that must break that oppression in this season in which we live. But listen, y'all, we sing in this place, become one people. And people need to understand our singing is not always because we're happy. Our singing is because we refuse to lose hope in the midst of the despair. And our singing prepares us for our standing. We keep our minds stayed on justice not because it's a cute idea, but because there's real pain and there's real misery. And we have to know how, as a movement, to sing the Lord's song. We sing about justice. We prepare ourselves to fight because we're not speaking for people, but we're standing with them. That's right. It is important for you and Iowa to know that there's movement happening all over the country. And we promise you that on June 20th, 2020, we're building a stage for people to be heard, not people speaking on behalf of people. You hear what I'm saying? And we're going to need at least one person from Iowa to be there and to speak to the world and to the nation, to be willing to tell their story, but also say what can be done and to come with fire in their belly, because we won't be silent anymore. I understand there's some seminarians from Wesleyan Seminary, and I'm glad you all are here, because this is what real the ministry is about. The pastoral, the prophetic, and the priestly must be connected together. There is a text in the Bible that some say was often used in various movements. Abolition movement, civil rights movement. As we consider this to be the birthday of Dr. King, January 15th. But it's important to know that when Dr. King decided to connect militarism, poverty, and racism, a lot of folk left him. Civil rights organizations voted against him, voted resolutions against him. He lost his invitation to the White House. People said, crazy. A lot of people don't realize it. Really, it wasn't Dr. King that lifted up the Poor People's Campaign. It was the welfare rights women that pushed him, just like it was Coretta Scott that pushed him to Vietnam. And it was Jewish leaders and Cesar Chavez and white Appalachians. It really was about, Dr. King said, this Poor People's Campaign. Dr. King said in 65 in the speech at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March, that when you look down through history, segregation was created for the explicit purpose of keeping poor and white people from coming together and forming a powerful political base that could change the nation. And if you read what he said, you'll understand a lot about what's happening now, because he said every time there is a possibility of that coming together, the aristocracy will sow more division and lies because they are afraid of poor people figuring out that if all of us decide to address systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism and white evangelicalism, if all of us come together, something gonna change. And if you understand that and understand the power we have today and the demographic shifts we have today, then you understand why we have a divider in chief funded by big money. As Neil Painter at Princeton says, what we see now is not the problem, it's the symptom. And it's the iconography of a too often repeated American reality. We take a step or two forward, then there comes a reaction. And you know what a symptom is, don't you? Anybody ever had a cold, flu? What comes out your nose is the symptom. And when you have the symptom, you don't just wipe the symptom. I mean, you can wipe the symptom, but if you don't get inside the body, then the symptom will continue to come back. In order to get inside the body, you got to be like those white blood cells. When something gets inside of your body, they run to the problem. And they won't turn back. The scripture says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 39, that in every age there has to be some people who operate like this. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction, but we are those who persevere unto the salvation of the soul. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Every age requires that when things get tough, there's somebody that knows who they are. We are not of those. Paul wrote that to the Hebrew people. Stuff was tough. They had, you see, back then, they had this Caesar on the throne, and he loved to build towers and put his name on everything. And he had his own media. He lied all the time. Right? Caesar. I'm talking about Caesar in the first century. And he had the Senate on his side. Caesar. Y'all hear what I'm saying? And he was making it hard for the people in the movement, and some of them were thinking about quitting. And Paul said, but you better know who you are. Because knowing who you are is essential. It is a theological discipline. It is a movement necessity, particularly when you're in crisis and facing seasons of challenging and confronting threats. Knowing who you are is critical to your sanity in the midst of insane situations. Paul Tillich said that when you are facing the very threat of being itself, somebody better have the courage to be. MLK once diagnosed America as having a neurotic sickness and a septic commitment to racism, poverty, and militarism. Now, you're not going to hear that on the holiday next week. Because we done messed around and called MLK celebrate. I don't like that word, celebration. You don't honor prophets by celebrating them. You honor prophets by going to the place where they fail, reaching down in the blood and picking up the baton and carrying it the next mile of the way. And what we have now where people come to MLK celebration and folks sit on the stage that don't even agree with what he stood for. And it's been made so anemic, you know, so weak. It's like pablum. We act like all Dr. King said was, I have a dream. That came after 17 minutes of talking about the nightmare. Yeah. I was in Tennessee last week doing the MLK event. And the governor came, Liz, and the governor wanted to take a picture with me. I said, no. I'm not taking a picture. Mm-mm. I said, let's go on stage. And when he got up, he said, he honored Dr. King because he tutored black children. That's right, I said, like my grandmama said, cheerings. That meant that he honored the legacy of Dr. King. And I thought that was so strange. And then I got up and said, well, you know, we have people that come to speak at King Days that if King was alive today, they wouldn't even sit on the stage with him. And so all the white folk can clap. Some of them is black people. Because King had a lot of black enemies. And so I started saying, I said, Dr. King was for health care. Everybody that agrees in health care, stand up, the governor sat down. In front of thousands of people. I said, everybody that believes in stopping voter suppression, stand up, he sat down. Everybody believes in a living wage, stand up, he sat down. I turned around and said, why'd you come? And I challenge the people that put these programs together. You shouldn't be allowing people on the stage who come on the stage and say they love Dr. King on a holiday, and then the next day they're in the legislature voting against the very thing that Dr. King stood for. Come on, my brother. Dr. King said, America has this capacity towards schizophrenia. I love my country, but I declare, America can get trip on you sometimes. And when you're dealing with something that's schizophrenic, somebody got to have some sense. Somebody has to know who they are in order to help a country that doesn't always know what it wants to be. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction. But we are those who persevere to the salvation of the soul. Why are we here today? Why have we been going all over the country? Now we have 41 coordinating committees in 41 states in the District of Columbia. Why? Why in May of 2018 did we launch this campaign on Mother's Day, and then on the summer solstice, over 30,000 people came to D.C. to say we are the founding members of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Why? Why have we gone all over this country with the real emergency bus tour to 91 cities and counties? Why is it that we've had forums in state and county after county and told the politicians to come but be quiet so they could listen to the people who were really hurting? Why did over 5,000 people get arrested in 6 weeks in 40 state houses simply trying to deliver the demands to state houses, and they were arrested in the 21st century? Why did over 50,000 people show up to witness that? Why has now over 38 million people retweeted the Poor People's hashtag and pushing the information out? Why has over 1 million people been on video? Why is it that this movement is getting attacked on Twitter and by Breitbart? Why is it when we started this campaign, this We Must Do More tour, mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating people to vote for a movement who vote, did we get a tweet that said, if you come to El Paso, we will make sure you drown in your own vomit? Because this ain't no joke, y'all. This is serious stuff. When you start talking about dealing with the interlocking injustices of systemic racism and systemic poverty and ecological devastation and the war economy and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism, because you understand how it impacts 140 million poor and low-wealth people. 43% of this nation is poor and low-wealth. 61% of African Americans, 26 million people. 30% of white Americans, 66 million people, are poor and low-wealth in this rich nation. Even though the stock market, they claim, but you can't measure back street and back roads and Iowa roads by Wall Street. Because that's only 1% of the folk investing there. You can't even judge it by, well, we have low unemployment, so did slavery. In fact, slavery had full employment. But if you got high unemployment and low wage jobs, people can work all day at a business and sleep at night in a car. When you start talking about challenging militarism, because the powerful and the greedy that push war, they don't fight. They didn't fight in the Civil War. The rich planters made sure that their sons didn't go to war for the most part. That's why after the Civil War, poor white folk and black folk got together. They didn't fight in Vietnam. They had bone spurs. My father fought in the Navy in World War II, and he was recruited at a time when he had to offer first-class blood for second-class citizenship. When you start connecting that together and building power, folk don't like it. So why, though, do we need Iowa? One of the reasons we need Iowa is because too often in this world, Republicans racialize poverty and Democrats run from poverty. Now, I hope y'all can clap when we criticize everybody, because that's this movement. As we're trying to change the narrative. You will never deal with poverty, Democrats, as long as you keep only talking about the middle class or saying the working poor. What the hell you think poor folk doing besides working? And you will never deal with poverty, Republicans, when you racialize poverty and try to make people think that white people are poor because somehow all this free stuff is going to black and brown people. Or you moralize poverty as though poor folk are their own worst enemy, and that's where they're, why they're poor, and you don't deal with the immoral actions of society. The Bible says in Isaiah 10, woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights and make women and children their prey. My personal piety doesn't have a thing to do with me having health insurance. Doesn't have a thing to do with me working a living wage job. I read an article that they criticized us for going last week, and the guy said, it is a dangerous thing for these two preachers to be going around suggesting that all these people are poor. And it's just a dangerous, it's just a terrible thing for them to be saying this and acting like they're all these poor people. You know, the percentage of children in poverty went down some. Okay, we went from 39 million to 38,500,000. By that rate, maybe we'll be down in the next 300 years. It's such a problem for them to be talking about raising a living wage. Well, let me tell you how the sons and daughters of slaves think about it if they are thinking right. It took us 400 years to get from zero to 725. We can't make another 400 years to get to 15. But still, why do we need Iowa? Well, let me go from the macro to the micro. We need Iowa because in Iowa, though even on CNN and MSNBC, if they wanted to have a special on poverty, they wouldn't come first to Iowa because the whole narrative has been so messed up that normally they talk about poverty, they go to an urban center or down south, which is poor. A third of all poor people live in the south, a third of all white people are poor live in the south. But nearly 40% of all the people in Iowa are poor and low-wealth. That's 1 million people. Yeah, 1.1. There's 1 million, and 832,000 of them are white, even though that's only 31% of white people. Now, 59% of people of color are poor. That's 254,000. How do you come to Iowa and have a debate and you don't address 1 million people? We need Iowa. I know Iowa's not in the South, but in recent years, Iowa has passed a series of voter suppression laws, including felony disenfranchisement and a photo ID law. And some 52,000 people with felony convictions are disenfranchised. That's half the number that Trump won by. I know in Iowa, from 2008 to 2014, Iowa's law enforcement has received $7 million of military-grade equipment. And I bet you every one of your politicians say they love the veterans, but they're passing military budgets that go to the contractors. 27%, almost 30% of all the veterans in this state make less than $35,000 a year. In Iowa, there are 100,000 people without insurance. 100,000 people. Now, every 500,000 people that don't have health insurance, 2,800 die. So there are people in Iowa dying, not because God called them home, but because Congress people from this state and senators from this state, when they went to Washington, D.C., they got free health care, paid for by you, and then they turn around and vote against their constituencies having the same thing that they have. Something wrong about that. This is the 21st century, the second decade in the 21st century, and 23% of all the census tracts in Iowa, people cannot afford water. In this nation, 250,000 people die every year from poverty, 600 people a day. 7 people died from vaping, and we called it a national emergency. They had a congressional hearing, they had a presidential forum. 7 people. 250,000 people died. One black person, a brown person shot by a racist cop, folk get in the street, ought to, get that, do that. But you think if 250,000 people are dying from policies, we ought not be in the street as well? In this state, 45% of everybody working makes less than a living wage. 630,000. We gotta have Iowa. They're talking about cutting food stamps right now. and 380,000 people in Iowa get food stamps. And the majority of them are not black. The richest 1% of Iowa residents are going to receive 25% of the benefits of the new federal tax law. And they are expected to get $4,600 returned, while the 20% poorest 20% are going to have to pay $70 more. And in Iowa, the war of Afghanistan cost this state $45 billion. For a lie. Isn't it amazing how after all the money is spent, how when there's never a problem finding money to kill somebody or finding money to help businesses that bankrupt themselves, they come up with phrases, they're too big to fail. But always about 10, 15 years after all the money is spent, all the people have gotten rich, then it comes out, somebody lied and sent poor folk to war and killed poor folk around the world. And $45 billion came out of this state. You know what that could have done? You could have had 35,000 new jobs in Iowa. You could have put every child in Head Start in Iowa and could have covered the cost of Medicaid for 830,000 adults for the past 17 years. We got to have somebody in Iowa that's going to stand up and nationalize this state. In this state, $642 million was spent giving money to corporations to come here without them even having to say they will pay a living wage. They don't even have to say they're going to hire women. We give millions of dollars all over this country to so-called lure them to come without them having to promise anything for poor and low-wealth people. But it's not just we need Iowa because of the problem, but we need a sound to come out of Iowa. This nation's got to hear from Iowa that Iowa has something to say about poverty and low wealth. But we also know if we raise the minimum wage tomorrow, immediately, to $15, 49 million of the 62 million workers that work without a living wage would make a living wage, and it would pump $320 billion into the economy. And your hamburgers would not go up to $7 a hamburger. That's a lie that's always been told. It was told when Franklin Delano Roosevelt pushed the New Deal. The same line was told in 1935. If we repeal the Trump tax cuts, we could generate $886 billion a year. If we just had an annual wealth tax on the 75 wealthiest households, we could generate $275 billion a year, more than enough to put 2.5 million people to work fixing infrastructure. And here's what we must understand. These things cannot just be something in somebody's presidential campaign. What has to happen is there must be a movement of the people who demand that things be a part of our nation's public policy. And we must be a movement that they know may be rising up in 2017, 18, 19, and 20, but ain't intending on going nowhere anytime soon. Because what happens is, many people know that if you run a presidential candidate or campaign, that's a year. And then if people lose, they go back in the shadow. But they need to know there is a movement that doesn't intend to lose. We intend to stay here and stay here and stay here and stay here until we reshape the economic character of this nation. That's why we're building from the state up rather than from D.C. down. It is a reason why you have a coordinating committee here, and that coordinating committee has three chairs, a clergy person, and an impacted person, and an advocate. It's a reason why we're doing it this way. It's a reason why Liz and I are co-chairs. I'm not the chair, and she's the vice chair. We're the co-chair, because we learn from history. You might kill one of us, but you ain't gonna get all of us. We intend to be here.
You're listening to William Barber, Why Iowa Matters. You can order this program by calling 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
Another reason we got to do it like this, y'all, and I notice, I'm going to teach you a little bit on the demand tape. The applause went higher for some demands, and it was lower for others. Let me say something to us in this movement. That ain't how we roll. You see, we understand that the same people who are against voting rights and pass racist voter suppression are the same people who block health care. Huh? That's why voting rights can't be a black issue. Huh? Voting rights has to be all of our issues, though it's racist, targeted at black, brown, and women and poor folk. It has to be something we all fight, because people use every state that is a high poverty state and a low living wage state and a low insurance state is a racist voter suppression state. We know the same people that block health care block living wages. The same forces that block living wages block climate change legislation. The same people that do that cut money for public education. The same folk that do that, look at their voting records. Look at their institutional records. They're against housing for everybody. The same people that are against housing and health care are also most of the time against the gay and trans community. Same people against the gay and trans community are most often against dealing with ecological devastation. And the same people that hide behind the false religious nationalism that says if you want to please God, all you got to do is be for prayer in the school, be against gay people, be against a woman's right to choose, be for guns, and be for tax cuts. The biggest lie that's ever been told this side of heaven. And there comes a time that a group of people have got to understand that if they are cynical enough to be together, we got to be smart enough to come together. And while we might have our silos that we normally fight in, that sometimes you got to put down your silo and join the army, the whole army that's going to fight for everything and everybody's freedom and everybody's uplift and everybody's justice and everybody's health care and everybody's voting rights and everybody's living wages. Touch your neighbor and say, I'm in this for everybody. And then we got to know some things that we need to have. You know, that's what Frederick Douglass, sometimes we also got to understand why we're together. I'm looking at some of you all, and I didn't know you all when I was born. I didn't know you all the first 20 years of my life. I didn't know you the first. Why is it that we know each other now? What's going on? Is there something in the Kairos? Yeah, if there's something in the Kairos that's going on. Frederick Douglass, you know, when they passed the Dred Scott decision that said a black man had no rights a white man ever had to pay attention to, that looks like that's the end of the abolition movement. Frederick Douglass said, oh no, he said, you know, evidently you don't know the story. Frederick Douglass said, wait a minute, maybe, sometimes see your there's the blessing of an enemy. I'm going to mess with some of you are real good. You know, Trump could be a blessing. Oh, you don't want to say it, but some of you all wouldn't be here tonight if stuff wasn't as tough as it is right now. If Hillary had won, even though we still had 140 million poor people, some folk would have stood down every now and then. The universe does something real tricky. Because the universe knows it's time for us to get together. Touch your neighbor, says time for us to get together. And Frederick Douglass said that about the Dred Scott decision. He says, what if this very attempt to blot out forever the hopes of an enslaved people may be the necessary link in the chain of the events preparatory to the downfall of the whole system? And then he said, the whole history of the anti-slavery movement is studded with proof that every measure devised and executed with the view to ally and diminish the anti-slavery movement has only served to increase, intensify, and embolden our agitation. How many of you have had an intensity in your desire to be an agitator in these last few months? So you have to know who you are, not when everything's going fine and well, but when they're not. Mother Jones, right in the middle of the time that they were blocking women from the right to vote, Mother Jones told a group that just wanted to pray. She said, look, pray for the dead, but fight like hell for the living. That's what I need you to do. It was right in the middle of some of the worst injustices against farm workers that Cesar Chavez said that once social change begins, you can't reverse it. And so what you need to do is start. Just start something. Just get going. Because once oppressed people figure out they don't have to be afraid anymore, you cannot turn off what the Lord turns on. It was right in the middle of a jail cell that Nelson Mandela knew who he was. It wasn't after he got out. It was right in the middle of apartheid that he would get up every morning and say, out of the night that covers me, black as a pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the failed clutch of circumstance, I've not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate or how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. He said that in jail. And every now and then, there has to be a people that your problems push you, that your pain gives you strength, that the challenges make you want to get up and do something. Is there anybody ready to do something in America? And as I go to my seat, there's a reason we had to be in Iowa. Because there's some stuff in the soil of Iowa. I don't want to use no highfalutin language. I just want to say there's some stuff. And I read about Iowa because, yes, there are folk in Iowa that want to suppress vote. Yes, there are people in Iowa that drive tractors around talking about they're for Trump and Trump ain't even for them. We saw that last night. But there's also another history in Iowa. They tell me that in Iowa, when they wrote the preamble to the Constitution, it said all men and women, this is in the 1800s, all men and women are by nature free and equal and have obtained certain inalienable rights, among which those are enjoying and defending life and liberty and acquiring possession and protecting property and pursuing and obtaining safety and happiness. This was in the 1800s, come out of Iowa, somebody say Iowa. They tell me it was in 1855 that Iowa opened the University of Iowa to men and women. Not 1955, it was 1855. They tell me that in Iowa, it was in 1873, Lord have mercy, that the law school decided to grant a law degree to women. I know somebody wished they hadn't done that, but they did it anyway in Iowa. They tell me it was in 1867 that a 12-year-old named Susan Clark was denied admission to Muscalane Second Ward Common School number 2 because she was black, but they won the case, and they won the case 96 years before Brown versus Board of Education. There's some stuff. They tell me in 1869, they had a women's suffrage convention held in Mount Pleasant right here in Iowa. They tell me in 1869, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that women may not be denied the right to practice. Then they tell me, they talk about New York, but they tell me in 1905, George H. Wooshen, an attorney from Buxton, Iowa, was a co-founder of the Niagara Movement that later became the NAACP. Wouldn't be an NAACP without that stuff that came out of Iowa. Y'all better talk back to me. They tell me it was from Iowa that John L. Lewis organized the American Federation of Labor, the largest labor federation in the world. That came out of Iowa. They tell me in 1934, there was the first mosque in North America was constructed right here in Iowa. Assalamu alaikum, my brothers and sisters. Oh, they tell me there's some stuff in Iowa. And if we can get that stuff in Iowa mixed up with some of the stuff from North Carolina, and mixed up with some of the stuff from Wisconsin, and mixed up with some of the stuff from Mississippi and South Carolina and Illinois, we can start some stuff in America. It's time to rise for voting rights together. It's time to rise for immigration reform together. It's time to rise and fight poverty and fight for living wages, fight for health care, fight for clean air, clean water, and full public education. It's time to rise. We know there's an abundance of resources. Scarcity is not the problem. The scarcity of conscience and the scarcity of will is the problem. But if we rise together, we put that stuff together. Now, while you stand, give me 2 minutes. Turn to your neighbor and say, neighbor, we have power too. We better stop believing all these lies, saying in 2016 somebody won. First of all, the man that's in the White House now got 3 million less votes than the person that lost. That's not winning. Second of all, 100 million people stayed home that were eligible to vote. And maybe they stayed home because a lot of them were the 140 million poor and low-wealth people, and they never hear their names or their condition. If we can force this nation to say their name and their condition and what they're going to do, then maybe they'll come out and vote and they transform this America. Poor and low wealth people have the power to change the political calculus in America. Do y'all hear what I'm saying? Do you hear what I'm saying? In Iowa, over 400,000 people didn't vote. Trump didn't win, but by 150,000 votes. If we energize that other 400,000 around an agenda, we don't even have to endorse a candidate. If we'll endorse an agenda, and then the candidate pick up the agenda, we'll know who to vote for. I wish I had a witness here. We've got power. And I come from a tradition that says one can chase 1,000 and two can put 10,000 to flight. I come from a tradition down south that says if God be for us, it doesn't matter if the whole world is against us. So you know what the theme song of this movement is? It is, it's not the waking, it's the rising. It's a song that's tributed to Nina Simone. And it's a powerful song because it says something. Being woke ain't enough. I know a lot of folk want to be woke, and woke is good. We spent 3 years going around the country to be woke, but you can be woke and still in bed. You got to rise up out of that bed and go to work. You got to rise up and register people to vote. You got to rise up. You got to rise. Well, there must be a rising that will go in the street and even jail if necessary. So the song says, it's not the waking, it's the rising, it's the grounding of a foot uncompromising, it's the foregoing of the lie, it's not the opening of the eyes, it's not the waking, it's the rising, it's not the shade we should be cast in, it's the light and it's the obstacles that cast it, it's the heat that drives the light, it's the fire it ignites, it's not the waking, it's the rising. And then the song says, when you understand it's the rising, then it says, and we can cry power. It says, Nina Simone cried power. We're going to D.C. to cry power. Why are we going June 20th? Because that's after the primary, but before the political convention. We're going to drive this agenda right down the heart of America. We're going to break this country's heart by showing them the face of poverty. And then we're going to show them a way forward. And we're going to organize with power. We've got power to make a difference. We've got power to change this nation. Is there anybody in here that believes we have power? Turn to your neighbor and say, neighbor, it's time to cry power. Maybe the racists don't know who we are. Maybe the xenophobes don't know who we are. Maybe the gay haters don't know who we are. Maybe the Islamophobia folk don't know who we are. But we know who we are. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction, but we are those who persevere unto the salvation of the soul. And by faith, we have power. Love power. Truth power. Justice power. Marching power. Going to court power. Voting power. Standing power. Singing power. We cry power. We need a bus from every city and every church. That's what we need. Not one from Iowa or other states. Can y'all do that? Harriet Tubman got 500 folk out of slave. She didn't have Twitter. She didn't have Periscope. She didn't have any of that. All she had was a North Star in the sky, a made-up mind, faith in God. Now, she did carry a pistol. I know we're nonviolent, but Harriet carried a pistol. And it was just in case you decided you was going back. Because Harriet said, we are not of those who shrink back under destruction. And Harriet would say, you're going to be free. Now, either you're going to be free in heaven or you're going to be free in New York or Canada. But one way or the other. But my larger point is, we can't let Harriet do more with less. And we do less with more. So we can do this, y'all. We need a generationally transformative event. The event is not the end. The mobilization is a sign that demands attention, and we will work toward the mobilization and after the mobilization. But right now, we need something where we all come together and say we won't be silent anymore. I need the oldest person in here to come up to the front. I know I've talked too long tonight, but there's some stuff in Iowa that gets me stirred up. I need the oldest person in this room, 70. Is anybody 70, 75? 75, 74, 75, come on. I need some, the oldest person. I need the oldest person. Then I'm going to turn this mic over. 76, come on. Now, I need the youngest person, the youngest baby, somebody to bring it. You sleep, Lord. Okay, stand right here then with. Now on behalf, what's your name, sir?
John.
I want to, on behalf of the movement, and behalf of this nation, real easy, real easy. On behalf of this nation, the Bible in Isaiah 6 said that when there was a time, the prophet had to repent for the nation. And I want to ask your generation forgiveness for how we've gone backwards and for how so many of us live off of the struggles of your generation. We ain't paid no real dues yet. And to ask forgiveness that here at 76, you have to see stuff that you thought America in some ways had put some of it behind itself. And I want to ask you and all of your generation forgiveness, because y'all fought so hard. But I want to ask you if you'll join us one more time. If you'll suit up one more time. Yeah, if you'll suit up one more time. Just one more.
In April of 68, I went to Memphis. And when you sang, "Ain't Nobody Gonna Turn Us Around," I couldn't sing it. I know what it meant then. And you have helped us remember what it means now. Thank you.
We need our elders. And if you can't march the whole route or stand, we need you to come. We just need to see you. You can help somebody. We need you to suit up one more time. And then those of us who are never really suited up, we need to suit up for the first time, because we owe y'all. We're standing on the shoulders of so many that did so much. And it's time to pay up, baby. It's on us now. Notice the tour isn't, we must mourn more. We must cuss more. That ain't the tour name. We must worry about Trump more. No, we got to decide who we are and what we're going to do. Because it's not just one man anyway. There's a narrative shift. And that night in 68, there's some words that he said that most people never remember. Talk about, I have a dream, been to the mountaintop. But in that speech, he said, nothing would be more tragic than for us to turn back now. Who are these babies? I want to ask you, young man, what's his name? And they may not be able to answer, but I'm going to talk to them in the spirit. Young folk, we want to ask you permission to mess in your future. Because if we don't do something now, you're going to have to deal with stuff that we should have stopped. And we want your permission to change your future, to make it better. And if we can't make it better, we're going to show die trying. I don't know if this movement is the movement that will make it fully better, or if this is the movement that will start all the things that will happen the next 50 years to make it better. But I know one thing, we got to do something now. And so we ask your permission. We ask your permission. And we need to see you too. Because I don't want 20 years from now him to be talking about 140 million people living in poverty. No. And so tonight, if you would just take a seat for a moment and grab somebody by the hand, you know, this is what it's about. Don't underestimate our power. Don't underestimate what can happen and what is going to happen, because we choose in all of our differences, poor and low wealth, impacted, people of faith, people not of faith, and advocates, to birth this movement and to live this movement. And if we don't, if it's only our task to change the narrative and build power, understand, nothing changes until the narrative shifts. Nothing has ever really changed in America until it became a moral issue and a moral crisis. Either it was immoral constitutionally, or it was immoral because of our deepest religious values. But something had to make it an issue that the nation could no longer refuse. I tell my church, I probably, most of us in here, have lived longer than we got to live. If you over 50, 60, I'm not trying to be morbid, it's just the real reality. You know. And as for me and mine, we've decided that this is what we've been born to do. I've been born to be with you, and you've been born to be with us. And really, life ain't even worth doing a whole lot of living if we ain't gonna be fighting against racism and poverty and ecological devastation, this war economy, and showing this world there's another way. So Iowa may not get back before June, but we want to see all of you. As many cities, as many counties, as many churches, as many groups, buses coming. Because there's some stuff in Iowa. And that stuff in y'all needs to stir up this nation.
That was William Barber on Why Iowa Matters. He spoke in Des Moines. Reverend Barber co-chairs the Poor People's Campaign. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. Now in its 34th year, we are independent and part of the nonprofit Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. Every week, we feature progressive voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Kianga Yamata Taylor, Michelle Alexander, Cornel West, Winona LaDuke, Nick Estes, and Noam Chomsky. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Stephen Roach Knight and Repairers of the Breach. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with Nina Simone. I wish I knew how it would feel to be free.
Wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all chains still binding me, yeah. Wish I could say all the things that I can say when I'm relaxed. I'd be starting anew. I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. Don't leave me. How sweet it would be to find that I could fly. I'd soar to the sun and look down at the sea. Then I'd sing, 'cause I know how it feels to be free. And then I'd sing, 'cause I know how it feels to be free. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart.